I'm here today with a friend of mine that I have known for a couple of years. His name is Kevin. He works in the entertainment industry here in Hollywood, California. And today we're in beautiful downtown Pasadena in an undisclosed location at his farm. Kevin is currently working on one of my favorite shows, a hit TV show. And I think this hit probably once your hiatus was about to start, I would imagine. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your skill set and what you do in television?
Okay. Well, obviously, my name's Kevin. I work in the camera department, as a digital imaging technician. Doesn't mean much to people who don't work in my industry, but in layman's terms, I color correct high definition digital cameras.
And how is this a skill set you developed or you became? How did you become interested in this or how did you develop that skill?
It was kind of organic. This industry is really driven by nepotism and relationships. My father was a cinematographer, but I came to it late in life. So I didn't actually start until I was like about 29. And I started pre-digital. So I started as a second camera assistant, which would be the person who you see in a video who hits the slate. That was me for 10 years. I was on a show, CSI Miami, that went digital. And I learned from there.
And what people may not understand that are listening to this that are outside of Hollywood and that have zero experience on a film or movie set or in that industry, this hit you, the lockdown or the lockdown that we're in hit you right as the time that you were going to take some time off anyway.
Yes.
But now, looking forward, what does that present to you as sort of your reality?
You know, it's challenging in that no one's really sure yet. I think CBS just released, just to go back a bit so people understand, we take what's called a hiatus when you work in serial television. So for most people, it's like a summer vacation because it was based upon when people were gone in the 50s, they went home watching TV and they took the kids on road trips, so they stopped shooting. We still do it that way. So yes, we were just an episode away from finishing for the season when we got shut down. Where we are now is nobody really knows, because typically what happens is there's something called pilot season. So we finish the season, we start shooting pilots that they show to networks for the following year. Well, that didn't happen. Nothing has happened since third week in March. So we're all still waiting to find out. Presumably we're all going back to work, but nobody knows when.
When you're doing pilot season, which are shows that are not regular show, they're a one-off essentially, maybe a two. How important of to your income is a pilot season?
Personally, not very, because I have been battling injuries for the last number of years. So I tend not to work during hiatus because I've been fortunate enough to be on a popular show that keeps getting picked up for new seasons. Had that not been the case, it would be very important. It's just fortune.
Have you spoken to any of your colleagues from the show that you work on about the situation weekly or every once in a while?
I haven't, because my mind doesn't really work that way. I only concern myself with things that I can control. So while we don't know and no one knows, I just don't see the point in conversating about things that nobody has any idea how it's going to play out. It's a waste of energy to me.
Now, you're living here on your farm with your wife, and when this started to become sort of a topic that was more frequent in conversation, perhaps on the news, or people were thinking about it or heard things about it, did either of you hear that you might have to stay home, or you might not be working, or we were going to take 2 weeks off of basically everyday life?
Oh, I fully expected all of this to happen. So when I was following, and I read the news, I don't watch the news. I started following it when it was happening in Wuhan. And I, look, I'm a former soldier. I've seen the wheels come off the bus. I expect unfortunate things to happen. So I just had a feeling that this was going to be the one, that it wasn't going to be the bird flu. It's not H1N1, it's not SARS, but I just had a feeling that this was going to be the one that led to the pandemic that, quite frankly, we've been overdue for. So I kind of expected the world to melt down with this.
Say what you want, we can't really choose who the president is. We can, but, you know, that being said, we have no choice on who the president is right now, today. Mm-hmm. So is riding this out with him something that is worrisome to you, or because you have a little bit of a different viewpoint on all of this because of your past as a soldier, do you feel that maybe what is not being said on the news is possibly something that shouldn't be a concern?
That takes a little unpacking. There's a lot in that question. At first pass, again, I really don't concern my, I don't give 45 any energy. I think he's a moron. And I think that I watch people play the blame game. And what I see is a lot of energy being wasted, a lot of focus being misspent, and a lot of hysteria. It's like watching, what is it, a frog or a lobster boil in a pot. You know, they don't know that it's boiling because they're already in it. And I'm seeing people do that to themselves. You can't change it. He's an idiot. Next. So I don't think about it in terms of, is it going to, it's, has he made a mess of it? Without question. Is he going to make it any better? Nope. So why bother talking about it?
I do see quite a bit of this on Facebook where people are just yelling at each other and it's nonstop. And it's like, I get it. A lot of people are stuck inside and they're not working. I understand that, but I can't imagine this is a good thing because it pits friends against friends. And then you lose friends over something like ridiculous. You can't even have a conversation with people.
Yeah. And they're not conversations. They really are. It's two parties yelling at one another. Like I said, it's two parties yelling at each other. It's two people. It's like total war. They just want to win. They want their opinion is 100% wrong, right? And yours is 100% wrong. Well, that's not a conversation, right? It's just two people yelling at each other. And I won't give that any energy either.
Yeah, I try to stay away. I'll look at it, and then I just kind of move on to try to find a police chase or something to watch, because to me, that's more interesting.
And honestly, I'm solution-oriented, so I'm perfectly happy to have a conversation if it's about how do we do X? What steps does it take? If that's not the conversation, if it's just airing out anxiety, I have far better things to do with my time. But I'm weird. So that drives a lot of this. I'm very solitary. I have a shit ton of hobbies. Back to your point about hiatus, I'm not typically working at this time of year anyway. So it's really not all that different for me. And because we have these gaps, this 3 to 4 month gap at the end of every season, I save a ton of money because I know that my health, my body's been bad. So I'm probably going to end up not working for that 3 or 4 months. So I have money in the bank because I always have to have money in the bank at this time of the year. So it really hasn't impacted me the same way that has affected some other people. So there are lots of layers of like anti-hysteria layers that are kind of just specific to my weirdness.
If someone were to prepare for something like this, or would you say it's like preparing for an earthquake? This situation that we're in now, or is this a different level of preparedness for a person?
Maybe it would depend upon what kind of, are we talking like a major, like 94, were you here in 94 for that earthquake? Or were you?
No, I saw it on television.
So you're talking about an earthquake at that point, that's 7.2, 0.4, whatever it is. It's breaking freeways. That's a major earthquake. All these other little ones, they're immaterial. If you're talking about something on that scale, even that isn't as significant as this. I mean, the unemployment is really, it's murdering people, literally and figuratively, right? The idle time. Like, even during an earthquake, most people still have a job to go to, right? They still can go to the store. They can go to the movies. Maybe they can't go here, but they can still drive to a town that hasn't been affected by it. So I think the scale is pretty significantly different. And we live in a mercantile, consumptive, you know, society where people's expectations are entirely driven by advertising. So the fact that people, all they do is they watch television and they watch ads, and the ads tell them you can have everything, you should have everything, you deserve it right now, go get it, eat it, put your head down in the trough. So when you have this abrupt, now you can't do any of that. I think that's one of the undercurrents that really doesn't get talked about because people don't think about it in those terms. But the buying, consuming machine has been halted, and it is ruining people's minds.
Have you had to fight anyone, or have you seen a fight over toilet paper in the supermarket when this first came down and people were, you know, acting as if it was Black Friday in the toilet paper aisle?
Because I expected this to happen, I bought toilet paper. I bought masks. I bought sanitizer. And as soon as I started seeing that there was going to be a prolonged run on these things, so I had supplies. And as I said, I'm an odd bird. I don't like people. I stay away from them. I go to the store as seldom as possible. I should own stock in Amazon. You know, there's a lot of cardboard boxes coming in and out of this house. So I ordered what I needed to avoid that. So no, the short answer is I haven't really seen it. I'm aware of it when I do go to this, and I'm a hunter. So I have 3 freezers that are full of game that I have harvested and butchered. And so I don't go to the store to buy meat. So I don't really need to go to the supermarket quite very frequently. There are people there. There aren't people here. That's better.
It was about March 12th, I would say, about March 12th, March 13th, because mm-hmm. we had a bowling tournament on that Saturday.
I think the day they sent us home was the 12th or the 13th. And they were
was a Friday.
Yeah, it was.
So, but the city still hadn't shut down at that point. You had just closed production down at that point. So what was the next day like? Did you notice anything different immediately? For me, I noticed it felt a little bit like after 9/11, there weren't a lot of planes flying. It was kind of quiet. There wasn't a lot of traffic. And it was noticeably different when you did go out.
Yes. And have you ever read a book called Among the Thugs?
No.
All right. It's about soccer hooligans. This journalist embedded himself in the 90s in England, right when the whole soccer hooligan thing was. He describes kind of this pre-riot vibe. And growing up in Los Angeles, you're kind of, at least when I grew up, you're very well acquainted with riots because there were a shit ton of them, right? It kind of was synonymous with that. There's this weird kind of eerie, something's wrong and something's probably about to happen. It's almost a Twilight Zone feeling, but the author describes it in this book as some of the hooligans would be walking, talking about, it's going to go off. It's going to go off. That's kind of what I felt on that Saturday, that Sunday. I'm like, we're not there yet, but we're pre.
And so when bowling was canceled for that Sunday, then you probably knew this is serious if bowling is going to be canceled.
Well, I actually was texting with Jamie, or talking to Jamie. Actually, I was talking to Jamie, and I'm like, look, dude, you're not going to be like, you might as well just cancel it now. Like, I'm super practical about things. And I understand, you know, kind of aspirational hopefulness. And I could just see they were like, well, how do we manage it? And I was like, bro, you're done. The whole city is about to be shut down. In fact, I think the last thing I said to him is like, you don't actually probably don't need to worry about it because the city is going to make the decision for you.
Yeah, and then from what I understand, where we bowl, that's how I know Kevin. But I think I knew you from Punk Rock Bowling, perhaps, before this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I became better friends with you. I knew you more.
Yeah.
Because of our bowling league. Yeah, it got canceled, and then I knew that things were going to be different for a little while, and then I heard that the bowling alley was boarded up.
Mm-hmm.
They boarded up where we bowl on Sunday, so it's definitely not like they're in there hiding and we can't go in. They're just not right in there.
Interesting. I haven't driven out there since. I didn't realize they boarded it up. Now, yeah,
that I was
they
told.
Own the land there, so they're in a better position than most places are because they don't have a landlord. Did they board it because they're not going to reopen? Did they just board it because it's glass and safety?
I think for security purposes, yeah, yeah. Because there's going to be no one there.
There's going to be no one there at all.
And that's the other part of it that is a concern. And I don't own anything. You know, I don't have a business here, thankfully. And I don't have a real interest in a day-to-day job where I have to turn the key and open a store. But I know that people were very concerned that what were they going to come back to if we weren't allowed to leave the house? There's a little bit of an unsavory population out on the street that people aren't really keeping an eye on.
Well, and honestly, there has been some time. I mean, the riots were in 92, 94, 92. Much like earthquakes, we're overdue. There's going to be another one because that's what we do here. It's an unfortunate, I don't know if it's in that, you know, and I say this. By the time I went to war, I had been shot at more times in Los Angeles than I was shot at in the first 2 days of the largest tank war in history. So, you know, obviously, some of that is certainly my fault. I could have made different choices, but my point is L.A. is so weirdly violent. I don't know what it is about this place. And I've traveled all over the world. I've been to 40 states and 22 countries. I've lived on both coasts. I've lived right in the middle. And there's just something about LA. And it's, I don't know if it's in the water or it's in the air. It's a crazy, violent city. And it's always underneath. There's an undercurrent. So my belief is that if they really do hold this safer at home into July, the city's going to explode.
That's what I feel too. I know that I look at LA, what everyone sees maybe outside of LA is like the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the LA we see is like the dark web.
Yeah.
You know, there's two different LA.
You know, it's funny. And I usually hate that term, the dark web, but it's totally appropriate.
It's true, because while they'll say one thing on the news, and then I've got, you know, 20 vagrants living down the street, and they're fighting in the street and lighting each other's tents on fire. I mean, that to me is like, oh yeah, okay, it's another right. It's another street brawl, whatever. But they don't ever talk about that in news, and people don't necessarily see that. Or when there's a wild police pursuit and someone's shooting at the police and then they get shot and they run across to five and they get hit by three cars. It's sort of normal.
Just last weekend, 3 days ago, we were shut down for three blocks. Cops tried to stop somebody, chase, guy starts shooting at him, hits a cop, they kill him. I mean, this was 3 days ago in nice suburban Pasadena,
home of the Rose Parade, yes. And the Rose Bowl,
yes,
and the dark web of Pasadena is a police perimeter in shooting.
Yeah,
you know, that's something that you don't necessarily think of in the area of the 210.
Right. And honestly, I'm used to that sort of behavior, just not three blocks away from my house. Like, it didn't upset me because I've lived in LA most of my life. It just comes with LA, but I was a little surprised that we have people just stepping out of like a movie, like driving and shooting out the window, you know, behind them kind of
thing. Yeah, it's where's Tarantino to yell cut.
Yes.
At the what there is none of that, I would think. What was your decision to go into the military? Was that something that you had thought about for a while, or?
No, I was, well, yes and no. The issue is I'm really just a geek in wolf's clothing. So, and I was, you know, childhood trauma, you know, the punk rock story. We are, you know, I always tell people, like, we're all the kids of broken homes and bad experiences. Like, nobody got here because their life was great. So, you know, insert childhood dumbness and badness here. And so I was making a lot of bad decisions. And like I said, this is 80s in LA. Lots of gangs, lots of punk rock gangs, lots of neighborhood gangs. And it was tough. I mean, so my buddies and I, you know, I was in what turned out to be one of the first skinhead gangs in the country. And it wasn't because you couldn't go to a show without getting jumped. So there was this kind of, you know, everybody's like, well, then we'll make our own gangs, right? Because that was the only way you could get to the Olympic. It was the only way you could get in and out of the Ukrainian Cultural Center. It was the only way you could, you know, you could get close to the Cathay. Somebody was going to try to pull your card. So that's kind of the backstory. So because of that, and then what ends up happening is eventually you become just like all the assholes that you were trying to defend yourself from. So you become part of the problem. And we very much did. So, I mean, I was, you know, fighting every weekend for a couple of years. You know, people were starting to get killed. You know, there were stabbings and this and that, just kind of bullshit stuff, but people were starting to get shot, you know, people. And honestly, I grew up the street from here, you know, in a giant house. I went to the best schools that money could buy on the way. Like the high school that I went to sends more seniors to Ivy League schools than any other school in the country. So it's not that I had a silver spoon in my mouth, but I was absolutely raised better than I was behaving. And I didn't have any money. I wanted to go to school and I needed to remove myself from this situation. So the smart money at that point in my life was join the service, get out of here. Because, you know, too many, because my number was going to come up. One of my best buddies had just been shot to death. And just weird Hollywood violence. It wasn't even gang related, you know. So I decided it was time to get out. First, I was going to join the Air Force. Got in another fight. Beat up a couple of guys. And I had already gone down to, when you have any kind of a record, if you're at least in my era, you had to explain why you were an asshole. So you go down to the MEPS, you go see the major, you have your little record, and basically the guy looks at you and he says, "Hello, dickhead. Are you done?" And you're like, "Yes, sir, I'm done." Right. So, and he's like, "Great." Signed the thing, and I had a delayed release because my job wasn't going to be ready. And so apparently I wasn't done. Had a bit of a difference of opinion with a couple of guys, and so I punched them both out.
Was this at a show, or was this just...
No, it was in front of one of my buddies' house, just drinking beers, throwing eggs at cars, dumb fucking teenage guy stuff, you know? And we weren't even teenagers at this point. We were very, you know, like maybe 20, 21.
You were in your 20s and doing dumb teenage stuff.
Just being morons, man, you know. So, difference of opinion. Guys come back. They get out of the car. They started running their mouth. And I dusted a couple of them up. You know, no big deal. Till you get busted. So, long story longer, I end up having to go to my recruiter and say, well...
You held the job for too long.
And it's really funny because he comes in, I come in and I sit down, and he's like, "Hey, Mills, how you doing?" I go, "Well, I need to talk to you." And his whole demeanor changed. So he reaches down, and they have these filing cabinet drawers, right? So he opens his desk drawer with his file, and he pulls out my file, and he spreads it open on his desk. And he says, "Well, what can I do for you today, Mills?" And I says, "Well, I got busted." And he goes, "You got busted." And he's like, "What did you do?" I said, "I beat up a couple of guys." And his response, Andy, I wish you could have been there. Just the derision. He goes, you beat up a couple of guys? You beat up a couple of guys. And I go, well, yeah, I mean, it's just a difference of opinion. And he takes my file and he slams it together and he puts it in a drawer and he slams the drawer and he says, go down the hall and see the Army recruiter. So I did. Wait, that egg, by the way, I went to war because of that egg. Had I been in the Air Force, I would have left 2 years before, because I had to, because I got bust, so I had to get off probation. I had to do my community service. I had another, so 2 years later is when I left, and the Gulf War kicked off when I was in training.
Oh, okay. All right. So it was an unintentional enlistment.
Well, it was an intentional enlistment.
Right, but unintentional into the Army, yes. in the start of a war.
Let me tell you that the law of unintended consequences is a real thing.
So explain to people that are listening to this that may not understand. They know about punk rock and they know about the music and that sort of thing. But the gangs were a very real thing. And I'm very aware of them, but I don't really know anyone that was connected to that. And if you could just talk a little bit about that. I knew of the Suicidals that were still kind of around, and they still are. And they were, I was at a show at the Alligator Lounge in Venice area.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the Suicidals are here. And the whole floor cleared out. And I was kind of like, huh.
You know, they were a little different because the thing about Suicidals are they were kind of a hybrid between, well, part of what ended up happening is, I mean, I don't know how far to take this back, but when punk rock wasn't originally violent, like there was definitely that, like pre-hardcore in LA, Brendan, you know, The Mask and X, and I mean, people were still pogoing, you know. And then what happened, there's a great book that describes it, if you ever have a chance, pick up, called California Hardcore. And it's split into two parts. And the first part is about LA hardcore, and the second part is about San Francisco. So basically it's about Black Flag and Circle Jerks, Bad Religion, LA hardcore as it started, and the Dead Kennedys in San Francisco. And it's really well done. And it tells a great part. It tells the story as well as I've seen anybody write it. But I'm sorry, the music started was obviously intense, and what kind of happened is it made its way down to Orange County. And when you got to Orange County, what you had were suburban kids who were athletes. They weren't just geeks, they weren't misfits, they weren't people who were questioning their gender. It wasn't just ragtag oddballs and their weird self-destructive music. You had really athletic, testosterone driven young men and all of the problems that can come with that. And this music and those kids were, you know, it was just like throwing gasoline on a fire. So then that kind of comes back to LA. And LA's full of gangs. And nobody's coming up here kicking up shit without a very puissant response. So that all kind of mixed. And like I mentioned earlier, part of the issue is that to have a punk rock venue, a lot of these were just these old clubs, these old theaters that couldn't. And the only reason they would have shows there is that they were really the only business that these venues could bring in. So they're all in shitty neighborhoods. And all of those shitty neighborhoods tend to have resident gangs. So here come the punk rock kids, Mohawks and Liberty Spikes, and looking like dipshits. And then here are the SAs, here are the Crips and the Bloods, here are the whomever. And they're like, the fuck are you from? You know, weirdo. Right? So you were getting hassled by those guys. And then maybe you get through them and you get to the parking lot, and then it's Suicidals or there, or FFF or the Lads or LMP or so. There was this kind of cross-pollinization between the punk rock gangs and the real street gangs. And bands would have a following. And many times, these bands' followings really became a gang. And that's what happened with Suicidals. So all those guys are from Venice. And you had, like, Venice Shoreline, Crips. Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff going on there, and then you got the locals. So they were as much a gang as they were a band following. Whereas, excuse me, the other punk rock gangs were a little more freeform just around punk rock.
And then you had, were you part of one of these at one time? Mm-hmm. And so were you following any bands in particular, or were you just punk in general?
Out here in the valley, one of my best buddies, Doug Kane, who sings for Generators, used to sing for a band called Schlep Rock. And before that, one of the actual first Oi bands in the country was Doug and the Slugs. That's Doug's band when we were in high school. So Northside Firm was basically the Doug and the Slugs gang, just like Suicidals were the Suicidal gang, you know. And we kicked up a lot of shit. So unlike the others, we were the first skinheads. And a lot of that had to do with, like, personally, I was never a joiner. But I was, you know, I had gone through as a kid, you know, new wave and mod. And I started as a little punk rocker. And everybody hated you. That's the thing that I tell a lot of the guys in a bowling league. I go, what you guys don't understand is all of society detested us as punk rock kids. I mean, I can remember sitting on, you know, doing my homework, staying late at that library and sitting at the bus stop to go home and having grown men spit on me or fucking just pull up the car and start chasing me, you know, because I had on a flannel and a flat top, you know, and my ears are pierced. So I got tired of running. I got tired of getting picked on. I just got tired of all of that. And then here are these guys who are the same. They're like, you know, fuck this shit. So that really was behind most of it. So I didn't want to be a victim anymore.
And that's what I think people don't understand is, like, when you tell people that, no, when you were punk rock back in the 80s and the late 70s, early 80s, faggot, gonna kick your ass, all kinds of shit. That was what you heard all the time.
Dude, and I'm a black kid who grew up in a white neighborhood with giant glass. I'm fucking Poindexter. Like, I can't even explain it to you. And I just had enough, man. Once I got chased off the bus stop, I was like, you know what? I'm not running from anyone ever again.
That's when your file started?
Yeah. It's about when the file started.
Oh, I see. I just need some clarification. I got to circle it back to that file. You know?
When I try to tell people, like, obviously you had to be there. And it's not like, you know, hey, kid, I had to fucking, when I was a kid, it was, you know, walking barefoot in the snow both ways uphill. Like, the world's just a different place. And punk rock is a time and a place as much as anything. It's a societal thing. And it was a voice of a generation. And our generation in our youth was really fucked up. And our situations, the world that we grew up with, was completely hostile to everything that we wanted to do as a youth culture. That's not the case anymore. And that's, I'm not even saying that's a good, I'm not, there's no value in that. It's just different.
And would you say that your life path may have been different if you had discovered punk rock?
Like, if absolutely.
If you were following, like, say, Foreigner and Leonard Skinner or all these other bands at the time.
Honestly, I was going to completely melt down and self-destruct because, you know, I was molested when I was a kid and I completely blocked it out. So there was there's an emotional time bomb ticking in the back of my head, as was most of the kids. And because society just isn't quite as hostile in general these days. I was telling Helena the other day, I used to do this thing. I'd take the bus out to Hollywood. There used to be a Pioneer Chicken across the street from the Greyhound bus station. It's been gone for years. And I go out there and I get a bucket, because I used to get gizzards with my dad. So I go out there, I get a bucket of gizzards, and I'd sit there and I'd watch the buses come in. And in Hollywood is nothing now like it used to be, because basically West Hollywood and the commerce and the glitz in the box store, it has moved, it's consumed East Hollywood. But East Hollywood used to be kind of like Times Square, New York, before they cleaned it up. Hookers parading on Sunset and Hollywood Boulevard, chicken hawks. I mean, it was a whole nine yards. So there are all these kids, and you could see them get off the bus, man. And I'd sit there and I'd watch. And they walk off the bus pie-eyed from whatever they try to escape from, wherever they come from. And I could see the chicken hawks in the crowd just circling. And they go through and they just sweep these kids up, you know. And there was a ton of street kids, because again, everybody hated us. So kids were getting kicked out of their homes the way that they don't now. Like this prolonged adolescence, we didn't get. So, you know, you had latchkey kids for one. Ours was kind of like the first generation of divorced parents. So that changed things. So you've got kid moms working two or three jobs, right? So the kids kind of got to fend for themselves. So they're out in the streets. Bad things happen out in the streets to kids. There was a lot of homeless kids. There was places like, I don't know if you ever heard of Motel Hell. And you know Mary. Mary used to manage Motel Hell. So you would have these flop houses, right? And you'd have these squats and these, you know, or like when they shot, what the fuck is it? Spheris's first
DeKly,
film. Not DeKly, Suburbia.
Oh, Suburbia. Yeah.
So those homes were all where the 105 freeway, they were eminent domained. So, but kids were living in those because they were abandoned, right? And that was kind of the deal. So there were, you know, in things like, there's this organization, Children of the Night, that would be out there just trying to help keep kids out of prostitution, you know? And so that was everywhere, man. You know, and so it was just a really hostile, but wildly entertaining environment, as long as, you know, you didn't get eaten by something bigger than you.
And had any of your experience growing up here in L.A. sort of prepared your mindset for handling something like this? Or do you feel that it's something that is, you're able to adjust to different situations because of all of your experiences?
Yeah, I guess more so in that I expect bad things to happen and I'm okay with that. Like they just don't disturb me. And I think what I see in other people who haven't had as much conflict in their life as I have is there's a bit of outrage. It's a combination of outrage and hysteria and fear of my worldview has been altered. This doesn't alter my worldview. So that already kind of, it ratchets it down to something that's a lot more manageable. I mean, I don't like to speak in emotional terms, but it emotionally, it's a lot easier to handle. I've seen so much bad stuff happen to so many people when they didn't expect it that none of this is surprising to me or even remotely disturbing to me.
You're a solitary person. Mm-hmm. You and your wife and your dog and your chickens. What do you miss doing, or do you miss, did you have plans to go anywhere this year that were changed?
Ironically, this was going to be the first hiatus. You know, I had a bad accident, so I broke pretty much everything that bends.
And how did that happen? Was this part of the file, or is this late life street fight?
So
I forget.
I was hunting. It's my morning of my 44th birthday. And I dumped my truck off of a road in the mountains into a ravine. I got ejected out of my truck, out the window, into the ravine. So I do a swan dive about 40 feet out of the window, down into this ravine. And my truck comes tumbling side over side down the ravine, and it rolls over me on its way further down. So it broke. I broke my pelvis in three places. I broke my spine in six places. Bunch of busted ribs. Destroyed one of my knees and didn't realize it at the time, but the recent shoulder problems I've had that you're familiar with, I actually had to drag myself out of this thing by my fingertips. And I pulled so hard because I couldn't even crawl. When your pelvis is broken, you can't even get up on your knees. So I was digging my fingers into the dirt and dragging myself up this hill hand over hand, and I pulled so hard I separated both of my shoulders. fun. It's a good problem to have when you're still alive. So that resulted in a lot of surgery, a lot of downtime. I couldn't work for 2 years. I had to learn how to walk. I didn't have to learn how to walk again. I had to learn how to walk differently. But in fact, I think the year that I might have been one of the years I first met you was at PRB, because I went, because my birthday is on May 2nd. That was the accident. And I went to PRB and just rented one of those little disabled scooters.
Yes. I remember this now. It's all coming back to me. And I don't drink or take drugs, but it's all a blur.
So I got, and they have one with a basket. I go, oh, dude, I want that one.
Oh, that's right.
So I have my little basket and I keep a six pack of Newcastle in it and my cane. This. But I couldn't really get out of the fucking thing. So at any rate, I don't need to get too far into that. But because of that, I couldn't even work for 2 years after that. And then I started this show. But every hiatus, I've had to have something else fixed. So it's either been, we bought a house and I had to do this. So I haven't been able to work on a hiatus since I had that accident. So what I am missing with the COVID-19 thing is, this was going to be the first year in 9 years that I was like, sweet, I can work a full year. I'm healthy. I don't have to have surgery. What? And I'm working all summer long. Nope.
That's the bad things happen. You know, just when you think you're going to get.
Oh, yeah. But honestly, because I'm so fine with it. Like, it's, and I'm in a weird bubble, and that bias, I got to say that. It's one, because I don't think like most people. Two, I have a very different approach to most things. Three, situationally, I happen to have a good job. Like, my wife and I aren't hurting for money. I have money in the bank because I have to, because of the work that I'm in. When you're an independent contractor, you really don't necessarily have the leisure to kind of paycheck it like somebody who's punching the clock does. Because my gig could go away, and we don't have the same labor protections that you would in the rest of the world. We don't have HR departments. They can walk in and say, you're done. So I had money. The only, you know, and I wouldn't typically be working at this time of year anyway, except I had hoped to this season. I'm pretty solitary. And like I said, I'm a hunter. So, and hunting was excluded from Safer at Home. So I split on the weekends.
Well, then it's affected you differently, I would say, than other people.
Very much so, but it's rare. And I don't want it to come across as though, hey, man, this is nothing to deal with. Because I don't think that at all. I just happen to be fortunate enough that it isn't affecting me significantly. And that's a blessing.
What are some of the favorite shows or movies that you've worked on, aside from the current one you're on, that you don't even watch, but I love, and I tell you it's great all the time, you tell me you never see it?
I kind of categorically don't watch anything that I work on, because I spend, you know, when you're looking at, and I sit in front of a monitor because I color correct, so I have these high definition displays 3 feet in front of my face, and I stare at them, or the set, for anywhere from 11 to 15 hours a day, 5 days a week. The last thing I want to do when I get home is watch anything. So I read. I don't watch TV. Like, I watch sports. So that said, I don't really have a favorite thing that I've worked on, because I don't watch anything that I work on.
Well, not okay, you haven't watched, but you enjoyed your time on the set.
You know, I did Transformers 3, and it was my first tent pole feature. And I had a lot of fun. I was working with good people. I actually like Michael Bay. You know, he's really hard on people, but we got along fine, and he actually made me, he's funnier than I think people understand. So Michael made me laugh a lot, and he didn't yell at me. So we got on fine.
You know? I mean, does he know that you're War Machine? Is this why he
This is pre-War Machine.
Oh, pre-War Machine. Oh, okay.
War Machine comes from the show that I'm on right now.
Oh, I see.
So that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I did CSI Miami for, I don't know, shit, 8-9 years. So that had moments. You know, a lot of, it's not so much, I think, the job. It's who you're working with, because we spend so much time together. Like, when you work in the film business, you spend more time with your coworkers than you do with your family.
What do you look forward to doing, like, say, the first thing once we're given the go-ahead that, okay, life can pretty much pick up where it left off?
Oh, in terms of the stay-in-place orders?
Yeah.
I'm going fishing.
And where do you like to go without giving away your secret location?
Oh, I don't fish. I'm not a freshwater fisherman, so I don't have a honey hole that I got to keep you out of.
Oh, all right.
No, I fish the ocean. So we take boats out of either San Diego or any of the landings that are on the south coast and fish Mexican waters or the Channel Islands, like San Clemente Island, we fish a lot. So I fish for tuna and yellowfin and yellowtail and, you know, big pelagics.
Is there one that is the one that got away for you? Is that what it's called, right? Like, the one that got away. Is there this great story that you tell of the one that got away or anything like that?
No, because plenty of them have gotten away. That's fishing. I don't have an old man in the sea where I caught the fish of a lifetime and sharks ate it on the way back in. But I've caught a fish that outweighs me, and I weigh 200 pounds.
And what was that like, trying to reel it in?
Tiresome. You know, I caught a 220-pound bluefin a few years ago. And this was before I was aware that I had broken my previous shoulder surgeries. So they were bothering me, but I had ruined so many other things in my body. I couldn't feel how badly my shoulders hurt. So I fished a bluefin, you know, on my knees on a gunwale, up against the gunwales of a boat. And I ground that thing all the way up to, and the captain had to land it. But I'm like, you know what? I'm just not going to lose. And then I travel to fish too. So I went to Cabo and I caught I'm not a marlin fisherman. I typically only fish for things that I eat. And they're not a good eating fish, but we hooked a blue marlin. So I brought the fish in and we released it, but this was the first giant fish that I was on after my accident. And so I'm not going to sit in the chair. I'm not going to strap in. You're going to stand up and you're going to catch this fucking fish, or this fish is going to pull you into the water. But that was really about proving something to myself, because I wasn't sure that I was able to do it. So I did it. But I'm kind of wired that way.
And has a fish ever pulled you in?
No, but that one was close. I had bruises from my quads all the way down to my ankles from the sides of the boat.
Well, why don't you give a final inspirational message, if you would, or something that you've been thinking about, or something that you think about that is calming to yourself and to your wife that has been getting you through this, if you have something.
I have one for you.
Okay.
And it's a drill sergeant aphorism, but they're not always assholes. So backstory is, I'm in basic training. It's Fort Jackson, South Carolina in July. It is so ridiculously hot and it is so humid, and thunderstorm is coming in. I'm watching the Coriolis. We're just ahead of a lightning storm. So they're trying to, and we're on the grenade range, which is not really where you want to fuck up. And it's also not really where you want to be standing with 5 pounds of steel in your hands raised above your head before the lightning strikes, right? So I'm trying to work this thing out, and I had a medical issue, and I'm standing in a foxhole with water up to about my waist. Again, so I'm like, I'm standing in a puddle of water with a chunk of steel. I'm not happy. The drill sergeant looks at me and he walks over. He just took pity on me, and they don't usually do that. And he goes, you know what, Private? He goes, you look like you have it pretty bad right now. He goes, and you do. He said, you look like you think you have it pretty bad right now, and you do. All right. Okay. He goes, but I'm going to tell you something. He goes, in 3 hours, you're going to be dry, you're going to be clean and fed, you'll be back in the squad bay, everything's going to be fine. He goes, everything is temporary, Private. He goes, just throw the grenade, you're going to be fine. So I did, and I've taken that with me. Everything is temporary, guys. It's gonna work out. You woke up yesterday. You're gonna wake up tomorrow. In all likelihood, civilization is gonna start again. What you have right now, if you have enough money, if you have a roof over your head, if you're not getting evicted, etc., it's an inconvenience. Don't make more of it than it is. And don't give energy to things that you can't control. Be productive. Quarantine! Quarantine!